Yeah. We know medical care requires informed consent, but laws require informed consent. Politics, entrepreneurship, how you engage in your diet, health, exercise, even relationships. These all require a place of being informed. And I am so sick of being called a conspiracy theorist for using my brain and being informed. So that's how this podcast came to life. This is Informed Consent. I am your host, Brooke Bocci. Let's start talking. Listening to this podcast for any length of time, you probably know I quite literally am like a fangirl of Dr. Patrick Flynn and the Wellness Way Method. I just love and gravitate so much towards the idea of healing the body and getting to the root of the problem and keep asking questions of why to heal the foundation to create the healthy life. And if you're new here or you've never listened to my shows or don't follow me on social media, I strongly encourage you to go back and listen to my episode with Dr. Patrick Flynn at the beginning of the year or checking out The Wellness Way at all, because I truly believe that they are going to be, which they already are, but they are going to be just such a force to be reckoned with in the sense of the healing space. They're already saving so many lives, and I truly do believe they're going to continue that. And I've been really excited and blessed to have crossed paths with one of the doctors of one of the Wellness Way clinics, Dr. Gates Mayer from the Grand Rapids Wellness Way location. And, you know, I've connected with him through treatment for my husband and I. Dr. Patrick Flynn doesn't practice medicine anymore. He more so is educating and teaching and building Wellness Way clinics all around the world. And when we were wanting to work with the Wellness Way, of course, maybe we were a little bit biased and wanted to work with Doc himself. But he recommended us working with Dr. Gates. He is, again, one of the doctors at one of the Wellness Way clinics in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And we started working with him a few months back, and truly, I mean, it's just been, I can't even put into words how wonderful an experience it has been. We have learned so much from him, and it's just really understanding that this Wellness Way method is something that is so much bigger than what anyone understands. And I can say that firsthand experience from going through it ourselves. And the more and more we've worked with Dr. Gates, my husband and I are just so impressed with the knowledge and the education that he has himself. And so I was so excited and honored to ask him to come on the show to share some of the knowledge with you guys and share what he's learned and what he knows and what he believes, because I think that this conversation we're going to have today is a conversation that is so needed to have, because I think there's so many fears and questions and concerns around cholesterol and what it really is and how it affects the body. And is it really bad? And, you know, I think it's kind of a big question mark, because we're told one thing, but then we're told another thing. And so I'm excited to have Dr. Gates on to chat a little bit about what he does, what he believes in, and then really get into the conversation of cholesterol. But before we get in, I do want to share a little bit about him so you guys can get a better understanding of him and his background. So Dr. Gates grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana, passionate about two things, baseball and health, both of which he has a striving passion for today in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Dr. Gates Mayer is a board certified doctor of chiropractic and has always strived to empower his patients to live life to the fullest by taking back control of their health. After high school, Dr. Gates attended Indiana University, where he studied pre-med and kinesiology. After his undergrad, Dr. Gates pursued a doctorate degree in chiropractic at Palmer College of Chiropractic in Davenport. From the time he entered school, he knew he was going to learn as much as he could to help his patients get back to living their life to the fullest and doing anything and everything they set their hearts on. One principle he lives and practices by is that the human body doesn't make mistakes and is capable of healing itself. He saw this most with his wife's health complications, including eczema, migraines, chronic fatigue, and asthma. He knew there had to be a way to help other people just in the conventional care for these such things. Through testing and sticking to the principle of the body's healing capability, he was able to help his wife. This extended into caring for families as well after the birth of his first son, which ignited a passion to continue to instill health into the next generation. His goal now is to teach families how to not only set themselves up for success in health and healing, but also how the work each individual places on their health now will feed into their kids and grandkids for generations to come. I could not agree with any of that more. And that is why I'm just truly so excited to have Dr. Gates on the show, because I align so much with what he believes in and what he shares. And he is just so knowledgeable on certain topics that I just know you guys will really enjoy listening to him. So Dr. Gates, welcome to Informed Consent. Thanks for all you do. And thank you for being a guest.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously I've been looking forward to this ever since we first started talking, just listening to more and more of your podcasts. It's so cool to see these podcasts that are out there that a lot of people are listening to and being like, you know what, informed consent matters a bunch and it applies to virtually everything. So mm-hmm. I'm excited to share a little bit today and get to know you more and your listeners as well.
Awesome. Well, cool. Speaking of getting to know you more, let's talk about you. Let's maybe, if you don't mind, just sharing a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah. Growing up, I was always just fascinated with the human body. It honestly started with health and fitness when young teenage boy, obviously getting into working out more and stuff. And I was like, whoa, this feels kind of good. Like, I like working out. And that stemmed into me wanting other people to have just a massive quality of life, feeling amazing, nothing holding them back. And so when I kind of was in high school, I was just formulating these thoughts where it's like, hey, I want people to, whether they're, you know, like wanting to pick up their grandkids or just get out of bed without pain in the morning or whatever it might be, for their quality of life to be enhanced. And that extended into my schooling career, where I went to IU, Bachelor of Kinesiology there, and then Doctor of Chiropractic. And in chiropractic school, I was able to reform that even more, and just being obsessed with how the human body heals, its capability to adapt. I know we've talked about that, where I always, God's greatest gift aside from Jesus is that ability to adapt in my mind. And that's something that I'll die on that hill every single day. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Cool. So you are a doctor with the Wellness Way. Obviously, mm-hmm. for those who are listening to this, I had Dr. Patrick Flynn, the founder of the Wellness Way, on this show. So you guys might be familiar with the Wellness Way, but I would love to kind of know how you connected with Dr. Flynn and how you, really kind of found the Wellness Way and found that was a good fit for you.
Yeah. So I love telling this story because Doc came into my life at like just the perfect time. I was nearing the end of my chiropractic schooling career and about to go to the VA hospital to do some work there, as an internship that Palmer has. And my wife all the time, horrible periods, migraines, eczema, asthma. And in chiropractic school, you learn about those things, some things that might trigger it. And my entire portion through chiropractic college was just like, I'm only going to adjust. I'm not doing anything else. Nothing against chiropractors that do that, but that's who I was in school, and my wife was still struggling. And to be honest, I just didn't trust sending her to anybody that would just hop her up on more steroids, more painkillers, just more all this junk that wasn't solving the problem. So then I met Dr. Flynn when I had maybe about a year left, and he was going through this presentation at Palmer. I was like, dang, this is, you know, a lot like my wife and her story. And he picked me out in the crowd, and there was this patient case story of like almost identical to what my wife was going through. And he was like, Doc, what would you do? And I was like, stupefied, I guess you could say. And I was just like, and I had already been watching his videos. I was like, well, if I knew anything about your videos, I would test and not guess. And he loved that. And so then we just hit it off. And going through, you know, we moved to Ohio when I was doing my VA work, and a friend from school had actually opened up a Wellness Way when we had moved out there. So I was like, okay, let's do some testing. Let's figure out what's wrong. Some of the testing is just like, we got back and she had done everything, you know, figuring out the elimination diet, AIP, trying to figure out all this stuff. And she found out she had a ton of food allergies, some stuff with her gut. We had mold in our apartment at the time that was just, she was taking a Benadryl at night just to breathe. And so through that journey and learning more about her case, I was like, this is something that I know I can help a ton of people with. That quality of life just continues to go up. That extends beyond just neck pain, back pain, the things that people typically know chiropractors for. Mm-hmm. And her quality of life just continued to rise. And so I was like, I can't, you know, knowing what I know, I can't not make a clinic that does the same thing so I can help more people like her. And obviously extending to today where we see people from all over and getting some help for those people that want that increase in quality of life.
Yeah. So for those who are listening who maybe didn't hear Dr. Flynn's episode or who aren't familiar, can you just kind of explain like what exactly like the Wellness Way method is and what you do like as a doctor there?
Yeah. So in chiropractic school, you learn about what's called the three T's. It's thoughts, traumas, toxins. These are the stressors that every single person has at some point through their life. And it seems to be getting worse for a majority of people that we're surrounded by. And so that what Dr. Flynn did, and especially within the Wellness Way, is he took that model and just applied it to modern day stuff. So we already know as chiropractors, we're really, really good at physical stressors and taking care of those. But he was like, you know what, there's toxic stressors out there that a lot of people don't know about. There's toxic things that obviously you've talked about on here before that people need removed from their life so that they can heal. And then mental stress, I always say, is like the final frontier, because you can't really always diminish that. It will always be a part of life, but making things better so you can adapt, get over those stressors, those triggers, that's really like at the forefront of the Wellness Way, and just being a network of health restoration clinics that are trying to bring about basically a new wave of healthcare. That is the premise around that. You know, that human bodies are designed to heal. It doesn't make mistakes. You do have the ability to repair, but finding those triggers is the crucial factor. Otherwise, you're just band-aiding it, whether it's a medication or a supplement, without finding those things.
Yeah. And I think that leads perfectly into what we're going to focus on today is band-aiding issues such as cholesterol with drugs and medication when this might not even be the issue. So something that I'm so excited to really dive into the informed consent on today is cholesterol. This is something that I don't believe has enough informed consent on. I think it's very skewed. And, you know, working with you more, learning from you, learning from people who are focused on healing the body and not just band-aiding it with medication. Everyone seems to talk about that cholesterol isn't actually bad, but it sounds so crazy to us that have been kind of quite frankly brainwashed into thinking that cholesterol is bad. It's going to cause a heart attack. It's going to cause a stroke. So I would love to hear your thoughts on cholesterol.
Yeah, this is probably one of my favorite topics just because I feel like in healthcare world, aside from vaccines, this is like the biggest no-no. Like you do not talk about vaccinations and the problems with that. And you also don't talk about cholesterol, heart disease, and statin medication. So I feel like they go really hand in hand. And that's why I really do like sharing some of the misconceptions that are out there, what the reality is, how much your body actually needs cholesterol and thrives off of it. And just letting people understand, look, this is something that you really, really need. And for us to just have a blanket demonization of cholesterol is, in my opinion, hurting more people than it is helping. And, you know, I always tell the students this because I go around the country just talking more about this to the students, especially because of their role in changing this dynamic with cholesterol. And I've asked every single one of them, the first question I ask is, what would you do if I told you there's a patient that has cholesterol over 400? And a lot of people, especially the students that know anything about health, they automatically kind of like, ooh, that doesn't sound very good. But in specific case studies, people have cholesterol over that number, well over that number, into the 600s, and have no resemblance of heart disease whatsoever. There's no plaquing. So this is something that I have grown very passionate on, because you could have really, really sky high cholesterol and not have any indication of heart disease.
So how, I guess let's maybe even go back into, how did cholesterol start getting demonized? Like, how did we start to think or believe, or how did the American Heart Association, like all of that, how did it come out that cholesterol was something that we should fear?
Yeah. So there was a guy by the name of Ansel Keys who originally has his background in fish biology, which is always really funny because he had this theory that cholesterol was the reason that heart disease was increasing, which at the time, you know, not a bad theory, just the way he went about presenting it to be actual facts was not so good. So he had this study that he put out, and he took a big list of countries and he charted this graph that showed, okay, the more cholesterol there is, the more saturated fat there is, the more likely heart disease is. But it actually left out a ton of other countries. I want to say just off the top of my head, I think there was 8 when there was actually 22 countries in that. And so he just missed the mark. And I don't know why that was or what his reasoning behind it was. But then President Eisenhower had a heart attack. And that kind of Ansel Keys came to the rescue and was like, I know why this has happened. It's saturated fat, cholesterol. Everybody's eating it. This is why it's happening. Despite the fact that Eisenhower smoked a ton of cigarettes. Like, that's just the obviously we didn't know as much as we know now. So it sounds right. Foolish to us. But, you know, I think there's just a lot of things scientifically that are at the background of heart disease that even certain recent councils have been like, hey, this is kind of an antiquated subject that we really need to dive deeper into and figure out the actual cause, because we've all been to some extent brainwashed, just like you said. Mm-hmm. And that has been something that has continued to perpetuate. So you see, like in one of the Time magazines back in the 1961, Ansel Keys was the father of the American Heart Association, basically, or heart disease. And he was Time's magazine or man of the year. And now then you come into contact where cholesterol is bad. You shouldn't eat eggs. Obviously, we've had a lot of in-depth conversation about eggs and just the nutritional capacity with them, cholesterol or not. And I always joke that we should start giving babies statins because mom's milk is filled with cholesterol. And yeah. I think it's just super, super foolish. And the reason eggs are so filled with cholesterol is because it feeds into that embryo. You cannot mm-hmm. have cholesterol, or you cannot have life without cholesterol. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of my favorite jokes is just, hey, we should start giving baby statins because they're just getting inundated with all this cholesterol.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's something that I always say, even, and because I just like to think of like where we were and where we are. And mm-hmm. I don't know too much of cholesterol. All I just know is what makes sense. Like the common sense is the cholesterol high foods of the whole food sources. So our steaks, our butters, our milk, our eggs, things that like have been around for hundreds of thousands of years,
yeah.
But yet all of a sudden heart disease is so incredibly high and it's cholesterol's fault. And that's just the common sense to me. That just doesn't make sense. Like yeah. How was there no heart attacks way back when, or, and maybe there was, I'm not saying there wasn't, but it's just so prevalent today. But then you look at the American guidelines, I just very quickly before we hopped on, went to the American Heart Association just mm-hmm. to look what dietary recommendations that they recommended, and it's yeah. seed oils. And it's low fat dairy and low fat milk, low fat cheese. And it's just like, these are things that are newer. Like these yeah. aren't around for our ancestors. And yet the heart attacks are still one of the leading cause of deaths. And it's just yeah. so interesting to me looking at it from that common sense perspective.
Yeah. And something you said right there is looking at culturally across the world. Okay. How long have we really been doing this? That mm-hmm. the butters, the steaks, the eggs for centuries, right? And there's a doc, his name's Dr. Malcolm Kendrick, has awesome books when it comes to cardiology type stuff. His most recent one is called The Clot Thickens. And he talks about a black swan in there. So if you have one black swan, you can't say every single swan is white. Mm-hmm. And so just learning about countries like France, heavy, heavy dairy, heavy, heavy butter, heavy fats. Like this is a country that has been doing this forever. Their food tastes darn good. And yet they still have a really, really low incidence of heart disease. So mm-hmm. a black swan is present. This cannot be the end all be all when it comes to cholesterol and heart disease.
Right. So let's even just kind of play like we are modern medicine, modern standard of care. Mm-hmm. What is an alarming cholesterol panel look like to modern medicine, like something of concern?
Yeah, pretty much. The biggest one that's always out there, quick Google search, LDL is the bad cholesterol, right? Anytime that is as of higher prevalence, doesn't really matter any other external factors, most of modern medicine will get concerned or to start discussing statin medications with their patient. I've had a ton of patients across from me where as soon as we get that cholesterol back, whether it's from us or another practitioner, the first thing they always say is, doc, I know my cholesterol is high. it literally blows my mind. If that's the only thing we pick on when there's like a million other things wrong in the lab. And so I get why they do it, because I think obviously it's a top killer. You have hundreds of people dying from heart attack, hundreds of thousands of people dying of a heart attack every single year. And I'm not even saying that when you put someone on a statin, that mentality is, I think they just missed the mark on what's actually going on. So it's missing the actual identity of what's happening versus what is truly going on beneath the surface, what someone's lab says. And even just when you look at total cholesterol on someone's whole entire makeup, the mathematical equations behind it, they could have high levels of certain markers and their total cholesterol becomes over the mark, even though everything else is within range, and it indicate, hey, this person should be on a statin, even though everything is within range, so to speak.
Right. So for those who aren't familiar with what a statin even is, can you just quickly explain like what a statin is?
Yeah. So when it comes to statin medication, it's not the only thing that's given out there when it comes to heart disease, but it is the main medication that's out there. A lot of people say, you know, hey, this is a lipid lowering drug. While it does lower lipids, it's actually not the main thing that it does. Basically, it inhibits liver function from producing cholesterol as a whole, but it even backs up all the way from what's called HMG co-reductase. It's basically an HMG co-reductase inhibitor. And that's the main kind of mechanism that its function is. Lipids just happen to lower because of that fact.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Oh, makes total sense. So now let's step away from our modern medicine role and let's kind of step into what does Dr. Gates believe? What is the wellness way? Kind of just what are your guys's perspective of cholesterol and what you believe cholesterol's role in the body is? And is it really something that we should fear? And what numbers do you look for and all of that good stuff?
Yeah. Simply put, cholesterol is king. Like I honestly can't speak highly of it enough. All of your cells are built upon cholesterol. All of your steroid-based hormones are built on cholesterol. So if you want to be a hormonally healthy male or female, you need cholesterol to build into that hormone. You cannot make hormone without cholesterol being a factor. Your brain, it needs cholesterol to function. If it doesn't, and you're lower on the cholesterol spectrum, you are at more risk for dementia than people that do not have lower cholesterol levels. And so I just think that there's so much that plays into cholesterol's role that it really is king. There's so much demonization from it, but the Wellness Way as a whole, and I try to teach every single doc that I come into contact with, Wellness Way or not, this is, you cannot deny the fact that cholesterol has such an important piece of your body's physiology. And the minute you take that out, you're putting your body at risk for a million other things, especially things like dementia, how you regrow cells. My favorite is that you actually need cholesterol to build vitamin D. And if you don't have enough vitamin D, vitamin D deficiency is one of the top, basically, things across the board that every single person that has a heart attack, they're low on vitamin D. So it's kind of like, well, if you need it to build vitamin D and everybody that has a heart attack is vitamin D deficient, we're missing that piece of the puzzle that needs to be a new standard of care, basically.
Just kind of hearing you talk about that, do you believe that that's maybe a direct connection with why dementia is increasing, why hormonal issues are becoming so prevalent, because so many people are fearful of cholesterol?
Yes and no. I think definitely like maybe 20 years ago, for sure, people feared cholesterol. They thought that every single saturated fat out there was going to give them heart disease, going to make them fat themselves. So I don't know so much now necessarily if I would contribute that to the main thing. I do think a lot of people in our generation are waking up to the fact where it's like, hey, yeah, I know this is high, but it doesn't mean we have to go instantly on a statin. And even some doctors out there too, but the American Heart Association, CDC, all those, you know, generalized groups out there, taking a little bit more time to actually come to grips with that. And I think that's the harder part. Because even like if you look up CDC stuff, it talks about heart disease and that everybody should try to limit their risk based on lifestyle and in some instances medication But in today's medical world, it's literally the exact opposite. Medication first, lifestyle can, I mean, can sometimes help is probably what they would say.
Which is so wild because so, I mean, just as you shared, you know, it's healing the body and the body was designed perfectly. It's just a matter of fixing the flaws that might've occurred of all of the three T's that have happened throughout your life. So very interesting. Yeah. Okay. So if someone were to come to you, so you said LDL is the kind of quote unquote bad cholesterol, where HDL I know is more of like the good cholesterol. So if someone were to come to you with very low HDL, very high LDL and very high triglycerides, what would you do in that situation? Because again, medical standard care would look at those numbers, especially high triglycerides, and be like, holy crap, like this isn't good. What would your approach, like what would you see, like how would you help that patient?
Yeah. So I would agree on the high triglyceride side of things where it's like, hey, clearly something's up. Something is not functioning as it should. And usually that comes down to the liver. Mm-hmm. When it comes to higher LDL, my brain instantly automatically asks, okay, why is the body producing more of this LDL cholesterol? Because it is a normal physiological response when you're under stress. And I always say, like, if you're getting chased by a saber-toothed tiger, your serum cholesterol goes up because if you get bit or scratched or, you know, whatever, you need your capability to heal really, really fast. So your body dumps more cholesterol into your bloodstream to heal up, clot the blood, and make sure that you don't bleed out and die, basically. Mm-hmm. So my instant question is, why is this LDL so high? Is it to make up for the fact that you're severely and chronically inflamed? Is it the fact that you need more hormone and you don't have enough right now? Or is it the fact that you just simply, you know, need something to make up for the fact that you're, you know, treating your body like trash with the lifestyle habits that you have? So I always go back to what's the healing mechanism. But I always also tell patients is, look, we can actually identify, is this LDL that's high damaged? Because damaged LDL or oxidized LDL is a very different story compared to plain, simple LDL.
Hmm. Interesting.
We can go into more of that
too. I was going to say, can you elaborate that in a little? Yeah. Like how is that different?
Yeah. So oxidized LDL, you can oxidize any tissue and it becomes disrupting in your health. Mm-hmm. But oxidized LDL, essentially the best way I can describe it is it's a malformed LDL that then becomes problematic when your body tries to heal. So if you have an issue in your blood vessel and your body says, quick, we need to heal this up, utilizing LDL, that LDL, if it's not appropriate because it has oxidation. So think of, we all kind of know when a cell's not working right, your body tries to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Well, the body, I think, does try to do that, but it can only keep up with so much based on the damage that you're putting up. Right. So if the oxidized LDL goes into that area, the body does send what's called macrophages to try to clear it up, but it instantly recognizes like, hey, there's something wrong with this. This is not the normal LDL cell we're used to. And it basically creates this almost gumming effect within that blood vessel. And that's how you get a lot of the plaque, because plaque doesn't form on the surface of a blood vessel. That's what most people think of, is that it's just like this, they picture, you know, like butter sitting on the artery. But what actually happens is it goes underneath the artery wall and that plaque builds up because the macrophages can't keep up with the amount of damage that's there, the oxidized LDL. And you get oxidized LDL from poor blood sugar, the toxins that we're surrounded by, the horrible, horrible amounts of chemicals that we're surrounded by. Mm-hmm. And it can really, really mess up that cell as a whole. Just like you would get from like a cancerous cell. It's really not a different thing. It's just how your body treats it.
Very interesting. So that my mind kind of goes into, I believe this was Doc Flynn saying, I don't know who was saying this on, but they were talking about how if you look at like an injury site, which is how this maybe got very connected to heart disease, is wherever the like heart disease was present, there was a high amount of cholesterol. So could you maybe kind of elaborate on that, like cholesterol's role in going to broken cells or, you know, damaged cells or injuries throughout the body?
Yeah, this is honestly one of my favorite parts. I get goosebumps talking about this every time, because in in around 2000, the Journal of American College of Cardiology came out with this huge long paper, and it talks about endothelial dysfunction. If for your listeners, if you don't know what endothelial layer is, it's the innermost layer of your arteries. And it basically said, does it matter? Is it reversible? Is this something that we should start paying attention to? And in that article, it talks about how endothelial injury, either physical trauma or subtle cellular damage, that is now regarded as the most important initial event in atherogenesis, which means making that plaque. Mm. So I look at this and in this phrasing, it says physical trauma or subtle cellular damage. And to me, it goes back to the three T's we talked about. The only way you can get cellular damage is either because you have physical trauma or you have some subtle cellular damage from toxins, chemicals, mental stress. So if even the Journal of American College of Cardiology is talking about how this is the starting point, we should be honing in on focusing in on that. So
yeah,
that they talk about that being the initial stages of everything. So if we can stop it there, that's actually how we fix and help heart disease, not just, hey, this LDL is high, let's medicate it. And even in that same article, the sentence afterwards says, even in, they use the phrase normal cholesterol animals, physical damage to the endothelial can lead to that atherosclerotic plaque. So even if your cholesterol is normal, you could still have that plaque being formed. Again, that was in animals, but I mean, we're still all mammals, so it's the same.
Right. Wow. This is all so incredibly fascinating. I think it's just, this is the informed consent that I feel is just so important. And it's just, it's not even half of what's out there, right? But it's just peeling right back the layers of just diving a little bit deeper into just the blanket statement of cholesterol is bad. Because, you know, I can even just speak from personal experience. I mean, right now, if you look at, I mean, you know, Joe is an I diet, you look at it and you're like, whoa, that's a lot of cholesterol. But like Joe and I are feeling better than we've truly ever felt. Like we were just talking about the other day, like our minds are like, I feel like it is so sharp. Like I used to have foggy brain. I used to have all of that. And it's just like, I feel amazing. And you take that experience and so many others, I'm sure, you know, from just the patients that you work with of, I guess you could say almost a cholesterol high diet. And that's just speaking for itself in the sense of how people are feeling and how the body's functioning.
Yeah. It really does set your body up for so much more success to actually heal. And even you talk about the brain fog, one of the top things with brain fog is how your adrenals are functioning, that cortisol. If you don't have enough or it's not being produced in a proper time, that cortisol is built from cholesterol. So you need it to actually give your body what it needs on a daily basis usage. And that's where I just look at people like, look, if you're doing a higher cholesterol diet and you have certain other things in order, like how you process blood sugar, how your body is exposed to toxic chemicals, your body's going to heal 10 times faster. Your brain's going to be 10 times faster. I mean, the whole myelin sheath that protects your nerves, it's made from cholesterol. So if you want better memory, you need it. You need it.
Yeah. What are some other things in the body that need cholesterol? I know we talked about memory. We talked about hormones. Like what are some other roles that cholesterol has in the body?
Yeah. Something that most people don't think about is bile. So what your gallbladder produces. So if you need to produce more bile to be secreted in your digestive tract to then absorb what's called fat soluble vitamins. So vitamin A, D, E, K, all of those things, you need a good amount of bile produced. And if you can't produce bile because you don't have enough cholesterol, you're never going to absorb those nutrients. And vitamin A, you think about your eyes. Vitamin D, we kind of already talked about.
Yeah.
Vitamin K is one that is vastly underrepresented. And that is just, that's one that always most people are like, oh, I had no idea that I needed my gallbladder to produce bile to then absorb these nutrients. Your immune system, that's probably hands down my favorite one. You cannot have a proper immune system without cholesterol. It is physiologically impossible to have a good, healthy, functioning immune system over time. Because maybe in the short time, this is what a lot of maybe other practitioners will say is like, well, I took a statin for 5 years and I'm fine. Yeah, now. But if you have a higher prevalence of cancer later, I'm not going to be shocked.
Right. Very, very interesting. So what would you, I kind of want to even go back. This is kind of going off subject, but you talked about the gallbladder. And I just feel like we should bring that up real quick, because there are so many people left and right that I swear I keep hearing from that's getting their gallbladder removed or has gotten it removed. Does this like play a role on cholesterol, or is this something that should be like, why is this happening so prevalently?
I think the biggest thing when it comes to people getting their gallbladder removed is, and we do this in modern medicine all the time, we focus on one specific organ because there's something wrong with it. If you can live without it, you know, quote unquote, live without it, then let's just take it out because it's having a problem right now. It's creating discomfort. And we're very much a society, right, of comfort. Like if I'm having gallbladder pains month after month after month, I get it. The doc's like, hey, this sucks. You're not going to change anything. Let's cut it out. Because the truth is, a majority of people don't change a lot of their lifestyle habits, and it comes back to bite them later by getting that removed. That doesn't mean they can't change, or a lot of people won't. It just is a lot harder for people, and they're not guided or taught the right way.
Right.
Whereas if you look at gallbladder function, and this is one of the coolest things that I ever learned from Dr. Flynn, stomach acid, your amount of stomach acid that you produce, stimulates your gallbladder to release that bile into your digestive tract. If you're under stress from those three T's we talked about, or just the go-go busyness of life, right? Some of us take 10 minutes to eat lunch. Your stomach acid is not going to be primed. And if your stomach acid isn't primed to rest and digest, you're never going to produce the right amount of bile that needs to come out. Meanwhile, it's just sitting in there. The possibility for stones increases. And so I think it's a misdirection in terms of, I get it, people with gallbladder pain, the efficiency, because people like to talk about that too. Your efficiency was probably low because of years of mistreatment of your body being under stress. It is not just this isolated incident. And I've even had some patients come in where they literally say that their practitioner told them, your gallbladder is fine, you just have a lot of stones in there, which is like, all right, that's contradictory. Why are we removing it if it's a perfectly healthy organ? Unless you literally have cancer or holes or something else structurally going on with that gallbladder, finding the actual directive cause, even something as simple as enough stomach acid, is just hands down where I think we go wrong.
Yeah. So interesting. Sorry, we totally pivoted from our cholesterol conversation, but you said gallbladder. And I was just having the conversation with someone the other day who wants to get her gallbladder removed. She had doctors who told her that she needed to get them removed. And my thought is like, you are so young. Like, that just is so crazy to me. But
yeah, if people did get their gallbladder removed, getting something like bile salts or ox bile into their system is hands down probably the best thing that they can do, because then they can ensure they can break down those vitamins. So if somebody already has it removed, even if you're contemplating removal, that can help your body heal because it gives you a buffer with that too as well.
So like you said, a bile salt?
Yeah. So like at least in the supplementation that we use, it's ox bile that you take in a capsulized form. That way you actually have something to help you break down those fats. There's other things too, like artichoke hearts can help you break down those things as well through absorption. So that's something, if somebody has already had it done, and honestly, 9 times out of 10, people come into my office being like, I wish I never did that. Because they rarely have proper bowel movements. Rarely do.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, and you know, you almost think about too, as you were saying, you know, it's removing maybe an organ that there was probably a deeper issue going on that just needed to get addressed. But but because you just remove the organ, you aren't addressing what's actually going on. So then you might have even more long-term issues outside of just the fact that you don't have a very crucial organ in the body.
Yeah. 100%. Yep.
So cholesterol myths, is there any, just going back to the conversation of cholesterol, is there any myths of the cholesterol industry or cholesterol in general that you feel like we haven't talked about yet?
I think we touched on it, but the biggest thing is that saturated fat. A lot of people still hold true to your saturated fat increases cholesterol, and it does to an extent, but it's really only about 10 to 15% of your cholesterol is made up from your actual diet. It is a majority from your liver that this cholesterol gets produced, transferred, made, and however it's packaged. And so saturated fat, while it does have some indication, it's a much, much smaller percentage than most people take in. And I can't remember the journal right off the top of my head. I can find it, have you put it in the show notes. But
yeah, please.
There was a European journal that came out and basically said, look, guys, saturated fat is not the demon, again, that we've made it out to be. You can consume healthy amounts of saturated fat and not see drastic changes in your cholesterol.
So what, for those who maybe have no idea what saturated fat is, could you just explain like what saturated fat is, where you can, like what foods contain saturated fats, just for those who maybe don't know?
Yeah. Without getting too deep into the biochemistry, the easiest way to think about it is hardened fat is like anything that has a hardening of a fat at room temperature most likely contains more saturated fat. So you think of olive oil, very liquid at room temperature, right? Not a ton of saturated fat in there. Something like coconut oil, butter, beef fat, those things are very solid at room temperature. And so they typically contain more of that saturated fat. From a biochem perspective, there's a lot of other chemistry that goes along with it. But from a day-to-day life, that's the easiest way to think about it.
Okay. I like that. I've never heard of it. Explain. I mean, I know, understand the difference, but just hearing it in that way, I like that perspective, because yeah, there's sometimes where I'm like, I forget, is olive oil or is, you know, seed oils, right? Like we could go on and on about seed oils and how those right. have, I think, been so prevalent in the cholesterol industry, which that's a whole nother story, but it's a good way to look at it. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So any other, I guess you could say, tips or recommendations that you have with people maybe who are listening with this, who are feeling like they're struggling with cholesterol issues and feeling like they're having doctors or people telling them that they have to do something, whether that be a statin, whether that be other medications, because their cholesterol is high?
Yeah. My biggest tip, and I always tell patients this, is especially from an informed consent perspective, is I can't tell you to take or not to take statin medications. But mm-hmm. what I can tell you from an informed consent perspective is, you know, why is cholesterol and how did we get these guidelines? And especially for your podcast listeners, this is like probably the top thing that I would want you guys to know, is just the industry as a whole, right? When it comes to agencies, they can be super trusted, right?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
As we've learned quite over the past few years. But cholesterol lowering statins are one of the most frequently prescribed drugs in the US. There's a lot more that goes into that than just simply, we want to help people, let's prescribe more meds. So in 2004, they had the guidelines of basically cholesterol and who should get medications or not. 8 out of the 9 panel members writing those guidelines had financial ties with statin manufacturers.
Hmm.
Huge majority. That's just in 2004. In 2013, the American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association brought new guidelines to the table. And basically, if somebody has a risk factor, it used to be just those that had a risk factor of 7.5% or greater in a 10-year portion, or excuse me, it used to be 10. Now it's 7.5% that have that 10-year risk factor. So they only decreased that by 2.5%. But what it did is that now a quarter of Americans that typically would not have been recommended a statin between the ages of 40 to 59 now can be put on a statin. 2/3 of the ages 60 to 75 can now be put on a statin based on those guidelines. So you look at the entire American population, even though that 2.5% difference had a drastic amount of population of people that can now be put on more meds. And with those guidelines being made, now more money going into it. And it honestly goes deeper than this. So I'm going to go on a little rant here, I guess. That panel, so the 2013 panel, they actually had no access to the underlying data and the meta-analysis from what's called the cholesterol treatment trialists, from those clinical trials to make those guidelines. So they basically just pulled out of a hat. So the experts wrote those guidelines without getting any of the raw data. 8 out of the 15 panel members at that time had financial ties to the drug companies. The chair of the group, his name's Professor Neil Stone, previously had ties with 6 companies that manufactured the cholesterol-lowering meds. And then there's also a Dr. Jennifer Robinson received $3 million from the drug industry for consulting in her research. So this, like, I just always tell patients that because I'm like, hey, what do you think about this? Like, knowing that piece of information, does this make it purely a, I want to help you so much kind of perspective? Yeah. To me, in my opinion, no. And all those stats that I put out there, they're actually from John Abramson, which if you know who that is, John Abramson was the guy that the FBI consulted when Pfizer had the $2.3 billion payout for the largest healthcare fraud settlement in history of the Department of Justice. So he's the guy. When the FBI is like, hey, we need some consulting on this stuff, whether this company committed fraud or not, they bring him in. So he sees all the raw data. He sees, do these people that made the guidelines or not, did they have access to this? And basically from his research, he's like, no, these people had super, a lot of ties financially. And not only that, when it comes to the guidelines as a whole, it's just not, it's nothing but shady in my opinion.
Yeah. It's super shady. I mean, and we've talked about that so much on all different medications and all different mm-hmm. drugs on this show in general, of just the different ties and, well, not even medications, but like the food pyramid, for example, and the ties between Kellogg and the food and the food guidelines. It just, you know, it's, I always say, I hate to think of it this way, but when I'm recommended something from a three-letter agency or government, or I always think twice and I go into reverse, because most likely you dig in deep enough and you find financial ties. And I don't want people profiting off of my illnesses. I don't want people which I get it. People, like, I am all for people trying to make money. I understand that, like, everyone's got to make money, and I have so much respect for that. But when there's so much deeper financial ties behind a medication that, like you said, people didn't even open up the raw data, like, that really makes you start thinking, like, okay, they're making these decisions based off of just what they're talking about and not actual raw data. And it just makes you wonder, like, is this actually helping, or is this what we are perceived to help? And then we have this whole perception of cholesterol is bad. Okay, so we can write you a statin.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And I love this. We talk about this for the informed consent, because at the end of the day, if you get that information, you're like, no, I still want it. That's cool. Like, that is your choice. I have nothing against that, but. And this is really just scratching the surface. So we can go even more into, like, absolute and relative risk. I don't know if you know about that. And
no.
Number. Okay. Do you know what number needed to treat is?
Yes.
Okay. Let's start with number needed to treat. So we can kind of talk about that. So this is like the number of people that need to take this medication for it to help. Mm-hmm. All right. So basically the number of people who are treated with a statin to prevent one heart attack or one stroke. According to that data that the people were supposed to have to make that guideline, 30 people must take a statin for 5 years in order to prevent one heart attack or stroke. So one person's going to benefit where the other 29 do not. Meanwhile, you have all these side effects, and that's in the first 5 years. All 30 are exposed to those side effects of the drug. Those that have already had a cardiovascular incident, the number needed to treat is 100 per 1.25. So 80 people over 5 years to derive one person benefiting.
Wow.
So for me, again, this is just what I want people to know, is like, if you're comfortable with that, by all means, go ahead. But I don't want to take a statin for 5 years to maybe not even benefit from it.
Yeah.
While, you know, so... That's
the laundry list of side effects.
Yeah, exactly. Out of everything we just talked about, where cholesterol is king, I want that bad boy to help my body heal as much as possible, not to lower it just for one person out there to benefit out of that whole list. When everybody can benefit, when we start talking about those three T's and how people can reduce their risk factor. So that is one big aspect, but there's what's also called the relative risk versus absolute risk. And this is something that I wish a lot more people knew about, because this is how you always wonder, like, okay, well, how can these drug companies say they can reduce heart attack by this much percentage? Doesn't that mean it works really well?
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly. So let's I'll try to make this as simple as possible. You can let me know if I'm able to reach across with you guys. But if you have two groups of 100 people, let's say one group is taking a statin medication and the other one is not. The group that is not, let's say three people have a heart attack in that group or stroke. Mm-hmm. The group that is taking the statin medication, let's say two people have a heart attack or stroke. That's only a difference of one person, right? So right. 1% essentially. That would be the absolute risk difference. Relative risk is when you compare those two groups, three versus two, that's a 33% difference. So this is how the drug companies kind of can skirt around and say, our drug is 33% more effective at reducing heart attack or stroke. When in reality, it's only a 1% difference. It just looks relative to the other group a lot better than the absolute risk reduction.
Interesting. So it's all a play. It's still data. It's still actual data, but it's just a play on the words to make it in a way sound a little bit more optimal to the potential patient.
Yeah. Yep. And even when you look at the studies that they put out, they put, I'm sure you talked about this too, just the amount of medications were pushed on TV. I don't know if you watched the Super Bowl or I watched the NCAA championship. I just paid attention to the drug commercials because I was like, I want to see what they say. There was not one break where a drug was not pushed. Mm-hmm. And you started to do more research on this risk factors, Crestor, Lipitor. If you look at the actual inserts and the safety information, it talks about how it's not actually been determined to prevent heart attacks or strokes on both of those. You can look at the insert for both of those things. And I don't know. It just continues to blow my mind. I'm not shocked, but it blows my mind when everything happens to be that comes out that way.
Well, and I think exactly that, like the inserts, that's what's important to look at because the inserts don't lie. And that's literally why I started this show was because I just wanted to talk about the inserts that were in vaccines. Take what you want from anything that I've shared, but look at the inserts. It's there. Like they have to include it. And even when you take the TV commercials, it's like at the ending, they sit there and speak super, super fast. And they talk about, you know, if you struggle with, please call your doctor. It's like, those are all the side effects they're telling you. These are all listed in the inserts. They legally have to say all these things, but yet we're pushing it. You know, I found it always so interesting because I traveled a lot with my snowboard career in different countries and you don't see commercials for pharmaceuticals because it's not like the United States is one of the only countries in the entire world that actually advertises for pharmaceuticals. And that's just so mind blowing to me.
Yeah. Yep. It's insane how much inundation there is when it comes to medications being our only answer. I mean, I just wish that imagine a commercial that was like, hey, if you ate more fiber, you'd be better able to not have so much insulin resistance like that or something like that would be amazing. But we have the exact opposite of nope, meds are your only answer. Sucks to suck, you know?
Mm. Yeah, it is crazy. And for so many, and I guess maybe I would love to know your thoughts on this is for the so many that feel like meds is their only option because that's what they're told or that's what they believe or that's what, quite frankly, we've kind of been taught our whole lives to believe. We're taught our whole lives to believe those that have more medical or more, you know, school experience than us. So that's why we believe our doctors. That's why we believe. And I'm not saying we shouldn't believe our doctors, right? But I think that, you know, for so many, like, what would you suggest to those who do feel like a certain medication is their only option because that's what they were told?
Yeah. This one's always a tricky one because like I said before, I can't tell them not to take it. Mm-hmm. All I can really tell them is, look, this is how the body was designed to function. Whether you choose to take this medication or not, I get it. And sometimes in some cases, when patients are like, okay, should I just not take this? I always just tell them, because I can't tell them not to, I just tell them go with the route that's kind of causing you the least mental stress right now while we work on this. Because the mental stress is going to be the thing that does them in more than anything else. Because if I tell somebody not to eat all these kinds of foods, sometimes that can, and as you know, can cause a lot of stress. That really can cause a lot of stress. So if we need to find a buffer period where it's like, hey, you want to go on the statin because your doctor said so, all that kind of stuff, you feel more comfortable with it right now. Okay. I can't tell you not to take it, but at the very least, work on these other things that are going to be making your body function worse while you do it. Do not rely, and I always tell this with everything, do not rely on a single medication. Do not rely on a single supplementation to fix everything that you do. Mm-hmm. There's always a buffer period because eventually the time of that benefit is going to run out. But yeah. One thing that doesn't run out until God calls you home, really, is your body's ability to adapt as long mm-hmm. as you give it a shot.
Yeah. For someone who's listening who feels like they have, you know, high cholesterol or is afraid of a heart attack or heart disease or, you know, a stroke, and maybe who's on statins without knowing any of their blood work, without knowing much, if there was just like a couple things that you could share, hey, start doing this to naturally help your body. So what if you're still on the statins? So what if you're doing all these? But like, what are some things you could recommend that, you know, the average person could do to just help with their risk of, you know, let's say the heart attacks or just the cholesterol numbers in general?
Yeah. I'm sure Dr. Flynn probably said this because we're pretty big on the wellness way, is just helping your body control your sugars, control your insulin resistance. Because whether it's cholesterol medication, whatever the disease process is that you have, that insulin resistance is always going to make it worse. So if I can get somebody to at least control how their body is processing sugars or the energy that they take in, that would hands down be my number one. So, you know, if you're not going to eliminate the sugars entirely, at least make sure your body's going to process it better. So you are lifting weights, you're taking in more fiber, you're actually enacting your body's normal physiology to make up for the bad habit that you don't really want to give up.
Right.
So that would be honestly my number one, is if you could lift weights and make sure you're not eating a ton of processed sugar and you're eating more fiber to at least counteract some of that. Mm-hmm. That's like a simple lifestyle hack that whether you're on a med or not will produce positive benefit for you. And if you feel like you're in too much pain to work out or do those things, then it's time to get some more blood work, because that pain is the reason why your cholesterol is high and your body is trying to heal. So you got to figure some stuff out ASAP.
Awesome. Well, speaking of blood work and all of that, obviously you take patients. And so I would love for you to just take a minute, especially for those who are listening, who are fascinated with you. I know my husband and I have been working with you, and you truly have been incredible for us. We've learned so much through you. I highly, highly recommend anyone listening to this working with Dr. Gates. He truly is wonderful. But if someone is interested in working with you, learning more about what you do, how can they connect with you?
Yeah. Easiest one is if you just Google Wellness Way Grand Rapids and give us a call. I'm selfish and I love talking to people in person. I will communicate with you via social media too. So whether it's TikTok or Instagram or the Wellness Way Grand Rapids or the Wellness Way GR. So those are a couple different areas. You're more than welcome to send me an email even to grandrapids@thewellnessway.com. Those kinds of communication, however you need to get into contact with me. Again, I'm selfish and I'd love to just talk to people on the phone, because a lot of people have questions like this, like we've already talked about, and being able to get you guys some more information and just share a little bit of my thought process. I want it to make sense to you guys before you decide to pull the trigger and become a patient. Yeah.
I think that's important to note too. And I want to just share that. I think a huge reason why Joe and I have really enjoyed working with you is you explain things so well to us. It's not like we're just going to an appointment and a doctor is just telling us, do this, 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 you need this, this, this. Like, you're there. Like, we actually have long appointments. We're not just meeting with you for 5 minutes, like up to an hour. We're, you know, talking with you, working with you, you're answering questions. And I think that's important, because that's helping us understand why we're doing what we're doing, and also helps us understand, I guess, things moving forward. So you're teaching, because I do believe that we should be more aware of our bodies. We should be more aware of our health. And while yes, by no means, you know, you guys got to make your money for sure. But I think what's important is if we can if we can learn ways for us to heal where we're not a slave to medicine our whole life, like that's the end goal, right? That's the end goal, is to be healthy, is to take care of our bodies so we are healthy throughout our lives and not needing constant doctor visits, constant medications, constant supplements. Healing the body, I think, is the end goal. And I can assume that you agree with that.
100%. That self-awareness, I think I even use that phrase with you guys, is just, if I can get you guys to learn one thing from any of the experience as to how to be more self-aware when something is right and when something is wrong within your body, because then you know whether it's outside of our care, like let's say we don't work with each other for a year, you know if something's going on or not. And that self-awareness can make a big difference. And I always want that for people. The nice thing about testing and blood work is that it's there to reaffirm if something is wrong or not.
Yeah.
And that's why we're so big on that. But that self-awareness really can hone in on more things for you.
I love that. Well, this was such an incredible conversation. I truly appreciate all you had to share. And for those listening, I will include all of his links in the show notes to connect with him, his email, website, all of that, in case you didn't get a chance to get that down. But highly recommend giving him a follow. He shares some great stuff on social media. Connect with him truly. And if you are looking for someone, if you're just not feeling well, if you're feeling unhealthy, or if you're just wanting to change a doctor with someone who can help you heal, I truly recommend Dr. Gates. So be sure to reach out to him. And again, Dr. Gates, thanks so much for being on Informed Consent.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me, bro.
How incredibly awesome was that episode? Dr. Gates is so brilliant. Thank you again so much, Dr. Gates, for coming on the show and sharing all that you have to share. I will be absolutely including all of his links and information in the show notes. And if you do not yet, please give me a follow on Instagram at Brooke Bocci, and feel free to let me know if you have any questions, comments, or concerns. I'm trying to be as active as I can to answer those questions and to also bring you content that you are wanting to hear. So if you have any suggestions of guests or topics or anything that you want me to break down on this podcast, I want to hear from you guys because I am doing this for you guys. So feel free to shoot me a message, send me information of what you want to know, and I will do the informed consent on it. So have a great rest of your day, and I'll be back next week with another episode and another guest on Informed Consent.